how much it's hard for them to criticize Israel because of the past. But now when they see me and they hear me, it gives them vocabulary. And then they also went to tell me how all their grandfathers were in the resistance to the Nazis. And I'm like, guys, it doesn't add up that all your grandparents were in the resistance to the Nazis. But it brings out from people really their personal stories. And also, I want to say something really, really important.
Very quickly, 20 seconds.
This film gives people a vocabulary and an inspiration for better actions and better conversations. And most importantly, you don't need to hear these things from an Israeli. Palestinians are the most reliable sources, just like we heard from the journalist from Gaza, Muhammad, a few moments ago. And so I really hope that people walk out laughing,
crying,
and acting.
We have to leave it there. I thank you so much, Israeli comedian and activist Noam Eliassi. And I also want to thank Amber Ferris. IFC is where the film is.
KBOO Portland.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from Metropolitan Family Services Cash Oregon, an economic program committed to improving the financial health of low to moderate income families by providing tax preparation services. Volunteers are currently needed to support this program. All training is provided. No tax experience necessary. More info on volunteering at cashoregon.org.
There ain't no kings in the USA. You're not God. No matter what you say, you break your word. You steal and lie. But you can't break us, no matter how you try. Olé! This land is ours, and we are free. From the desert sands to the shining sea. Hand in hand, and unbent, unbroke. You spit your hate. We wake, we woke.
Good morning, Portland and beyond. Thank you for including PDX Progressive Talk Radio in your morning routine today. If you're listening in this morning, it's Wednesday, October 30th, and you're listening to a pre-recorded show from October 25th, 2025. I'm grateful for my audience, so thank you for listening. And I'm also happy to be able to bring you information you can only get right here on KBOO Community Radio at 90.7 FM in Portland or KBOO.FM everywhere. Today I have a couple things to share. We'll start with the October 18th National Rally Against Hate. Across America, thousands have taken to the streets under the banner No Kings. But at the same time, a federal shutdown threatens to cut off food for millions through the SNAP program starting November 1st. These stories may seem different, one about power, the other about poverty, but they share one common truth. When government fails, it's the people who rise up to fill in the gaps. Stick with me for the next hour as we talk about protest, policy, and what it means to defend democracy, not just with signs, but with compassion. For those who are unsure of what's happening in the community, there's a movement called No Kings. And so in this section, we talk about No Kings and why now. So last week, thousands, tens of thousands, marched in cities across all 50 states under a simple, defiant slogan: no thrones, no crowns, no kings. The No Kings rally began as a response to what activists are calling creeping authoritarianism. Concerns over executive overreach, civil liberties, and threats to domestic norms. Here in Portland, the movement found fertile ground. Protesters filled Tom McCall Waterfront Park. I don't know about you, but I have never seen that park so full. They were carrying handmade signs, instruments, and inflatable frogs. Our city's own signature of humor and resistance. From students to seniors, artists to labor organizers, Portland turned out to say one thing. Democracy isn't inherited, it's maintained. I found a clip on YouTube from Mother Jones, the magazine. It's a very progressive magazine that I read periodically. I found their channel on YouTube, and I found a cool video featuring Portland City Councilor Angelina Morillo. Credit to independent journalist Kevin Foster. Take a listen.
Our First Amendment rights is, you know, the foundation of being an American. Having the right to say, you know, what we think is right for ourselves and our neighbors is what America is about. And anyone trying to interrupt that is anti-American.
I'm out at Portland's No Kings protest. There's thousands of people here. Yeah, I'm just talking to people about why they're out here and why they believe that there shouldn't be kings in America.
I would call it the Trump regime rather than the Trump administration. Then I would suppose I would tell them to try to understand what this country's about and that there are a lot of people out there who aren't like them that need representing too.
I mean, you look at how much the cops are being militarized, how much Trump is using his platform to divide America. And everything is about wanting to hate on the people that he hates.
I'm trans, so it's been, I mean, I've been fine, but like in the news, there's constantly, everything is so
always going to stand by immigrants. We're always going to stand by trans people and queer people. We're always going to be an inclusive city. So it means a lot to me to see so many people out here today showing that this country is exactly what it should be, a place where everyone belongs.
I've been coming to these rallies for, gosh, since the first administration or first term. And but now it's just more. We got to get this word. We got to get the word out, you know, this right here, everything.
My roommate was on Snap, and we actually would pull together to go grocery shopping together, and now we can't do that anymore because he's going to lose Snap, and this means that we're now going to probably struggle a little bit for groceries.
I think about it all the time. I wish I didn't think about it. I wish I could think about something else, but it's frightening. You know, when you're this old, you've seen a lot of administrations and times come and go, and this is the most frightening one I remember.
I'm out here because I really have a love for our country and a love for the promise of our country, and everything happening right now is destroying that promise, that commitment that we have to ourselves and to our neighbors. And it's time for us, the people, to stand up and take our country back.
I think that the need for control is inherently unnatural, and that's why they have to enforce everything so much, because they are not supposed to be in positions of leadership. They are not supposed to have power. And ultimately, they don't have the love or support of the people, and the people are going to win.
City officials coordinated with organizers to keep the rallies peaceful. And by day's end, not a single major incident was reported. It was, by most accounts, a model of civic engagement done right. For my pre-recorded versions, and even as I get deeper into the live show, I've been wanting to integrate more music. So here is The Clash with Know Your Rights.
Everybody will now. Not humiliated and treated otherwise. Fashion. Know your rights. All three out there.
For those unfamiliar, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Fund, otherwise known as SNAP, provides monthly electronic benefits for groceries. It serves over 40 million Americans, including roughly 400,000 Oregonians. Funds come from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which currently can only pay benefits through the end of October. Without congressional action, the government is closed, those EBT cards may not reload on November 1st. Imagine waking up to find the balance on your EBT card at zero. Not because you lost your job, but because politics has frozen the system. I don't have anyone to interview on this, but from personal experience, when I was a young mother, I was on food stamps to feed three kids, and we honestly didn't get very much at the time. Back then, it was all welfare. So you received, if you were eligible, an allocation of food stamps, health care, and rental assistance. Unfortunately, if you didn't do things that the system, the welfare system requirements said that you should do, you didn't receive those benefits. And a lot of times they would do home inspections, and I think they still do those today, to verify that you were actually in need. You had to fill out monthly paperwork, which they still do, stating if you looked for work, you know, did work. At the time, even back in the 90s, many of us worked. Those of us on the system worked. And we couldn't work too much because it would impact the available funding we would receive. And that's a difficult choice when the money that you're bringing in from your job is not enough to cover what you would lose if you were full-time employed. It was this way in the 90s, and that's why sometimes it's crazy that people today in Portland act the way they do toward homeless people, because this isn't new. Anybody who's listened to me for any amount of time knows that I've been homeless in Portland a couple of times, and I've been a welfare mom. I've had, you know, a really difficult existence, especially in my 20s. So I have a special understanding of what a lot of these people are going through. And it's for those of you who are excited about this and who want this to happen to your neighbors, I feel sorry for you. In Clackamas County and the greater Portland area, many families already live paycheck to paycheck. 78% approximately of welfare recipients or SNAP benefit recipients work at least part-time. I know of a lot of nonprofits here in the area who help families experiencing food insecurity, and they're having trouble keeping the doors open. They aren't receiving the amount of allocations they would normally receive from neighbors and organizations, and they aren't receiving the same amount of funding that they have in the past. The state's Department of Health and Human Services said it will post updates on Oregon.gov/DHS and through the SNAP hotline at 1-800-699-9075. Again, the SNAP hotline number is 1-800-699-9075. Listen in real quick as KGW's The Story's Blair Best interviews Portland State University students as they prepare to lose SNAP benefits due to the federal government closure.
Inside Portland State University's food pantry,
we are a resource here for students.
Tess Conley braces for November 1st.
We expect to see a huge influx in people utilizing the pantry.
Next month, due to the ongoing federal government shutdown, one in six Oregonians, around 750,000 people, may lose food stamp benefits through SNAP, the federal supplemental nutrition assistance program. It helps people with low incomes pay for groceries, including college students.
I don't know. I'm really hoping.
Like Ray.
I don't have a clear budget for my food. It's only from SNAP.
Ray gets roughly $290 a month through SNAP, the maximum amount for a full-time student, she says.
Without that money, I have to find a way to take it from something else.
Something that me and my kids depend on a lot.
Julie is a full-time mother and a PSU freshman.
But it's something that I am concerned about. But I'm one of those people that has the advantage and, you know, opportunity to be in this area where there is a lot of, like, support for moms. But I know, like, a lot of people don't have that. So, you know, it's worrisome.
This year, about 11,000 PSU students reported being food insecure, according to campus food pantry data.
And we haven't even seen the cuts from SNAP yet.
I'm worried about the situation.
College junior Marin, among those now turning to the school's food pantry for help.
I think I have a plan to move forward. Of course, there is that worry that things might not go to plan.
I would say to start thinking ahead. Visit the pantry as often as possible and start stocking up on dried goods, things that are going to keep in your pantry. I don't want to instill any fear or have people panic, because we're not going anywhere and we're gonna be here to support you as best as we can throughout the entire month of November and however long this might last.
The federal government has been shut down for 24 days as of Friday. The shutdown will extend into next week as Democrats and Republicans continue to clash over healthcare funding.
I feel powerless about it because this is something that I didn't shut down the government. Nobody I know shut down the government and chose to have this.
I think it's horrible, and I really think they need to get it together so that people and families can have what they need to survive out here.
Okay, if this shutdown continues and SNAP benefits do not come through next month, we know it will impact more than 750,000 people statewide. But let's take a look at the impact in Multnomah County, the state's most populous. 143,000 people receive SNAP benefits here, including almost 40,000 children and 20,000 seniors. Now that adds up to about $6 million in benefits every month. I talked with the Multnomah County chair just a few hours ago, and she has this message for those impacted.
But I want to, you know, assure you and everyone watching, we're working with our community partners to see what are all the things that we can do to keep people from experiencing hunger and food insecurity. So we are working on that. I do want to encourage people, everyone in our community, to donate or to volunteer with the food bank. I know that the Oregon Food Bank.
The chair and other local leaders now calling on the federal government to release contingency funds to keep SNAP food assistance going despite the ongoing shutdown, now the second longest in U.S. history.
The thing that makes me angry about this is purely preventable, right? We have children, seniors, veterans, people with disabilities, all of these people who are relying on SNAP to make sure that they don't go hungry. And it's unconscionable that the federal government is shutting off this critical resource to people when it is something that they actually have the power to correct in an instant.
And just today, a memo from the federal agency in charge of SNAP says the Trump administration will not use contingency funds to keep the money flowing next month. It says those funds are not legally available to cover regular benefits and are instead for helping people in disaster areas like those affected by severe weather. The document goes on to blame Democrats for the government shutdown and the reason SNAP benefits won't be paid in November. You know, the political finger pointing in D.C. seemingly reaching a new low here, with parties not willing or able to make a compromise, using hungry Americans as the pawns.
Here's what you can do to make a difference now. First, stay active in democracy. Peaceful protest matters, whether it's a No Kings rally or your next city council meeting. Two, call representatives. Tell them SNAP is not negotiable. It feeds kids, veterans, and working families. The third thing you can do is support local aid. Donate or volunteer at the Oregon Food Bank, Clackamas Service Center, or loved one in Oregon City and Milwaukee. There's the Father's Heart. There's many different places, the Gospel Mission. You can even donate at Blanchet, the Blanchet House here in Portland. If you would like information on where you can donate or volunteer, there's a couple of opportunities, but also be proactive in spreading awareness. Share verified updates about SNAP so families know what's happening before it happens, and we don't have much time. It's only a few days. So again, if you want to help, if you want to volunteer or learn more about how you can help, there's a couple opportunities. You can visit OregonFoodBank.org. You can call 1-800-699-9075. You can listen to KBOO. We have a lot of updates about different opportunities where the community can be of service. Call your local food bank. Ask if they need donations. They probably do. And if so, what will they accept? Up near Rockwood, there's a church right off of Stark, and I don't have the name in front of me. But even in the Rockwood area, they have a food bank. They have community centers. They have places all over Portland where the help is needed. And definitely get in touch with your city to find out where you can help. From protest signs downtown to empty kitchen cabinets, the message is the same. Democracy only works when people do. It's not enough to shout, "No kings," if we ignore the hunger of our neighbors. True civic power means ensuring everyone has both a voice and a meal. Thank you, Portland, for showing up, speaking out, and standing tall. One of my most favorite songs from one of my most favorite bands, "Taking It to the Streets" by the Doobie Brothers.
You don't know my kind.
Now, in other areas, we want to turn our attention to two stories unfolding this week that tell us a lot about power, control, and the future of American democracy. One is happening right here at home. It's the federal deployment of National Guard troops into Portland, which has been temporarily halted by a Ninth Circuit Court ruling. The other is 3,000 miles away, the demolition of the East Wing of the White House, a move that's raising questions about history, transparency, and the concentration of power. Let's begin in Oregon. Over the past few weeks, Portland once again found itself on the national stage. Not for our food carts, our forests, or our politics, but for something a lot more diabolical. The Trump administration issued an order to deploy federalized National Guard troops into Oregon, claiming that it was necessary to protect federal property and maintain order after a series of large public demonstrations. But Oregon state officials have pushed back pretty hard. Governor Tina Kotek and Attorney General Dan Rayfield both challenged the order, arguing that the president is overstepping constitutional bounds and violating the Posse Comitatus Act, which limits the use of federal troops for domestic law enforcement. A federal judge in Oregon granted a temporary restraining order, essentially freezing the deployment. And this week, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit weighed in. In a narrow 2-1 decision, the panel kept the hold in place, saying the administration failed to demonstrate that Portland posed an emergency justifying military intervention. This means, at least for now, those troops are not coming. But the fight isn't over. The Justice Department says it will appeal again. This may sound procedural, but it's actually monumental. At its core, the question is, who controls our streets? Is it the local elected leaders accountable to residents, or a president acting unilaterally from Washington? The Ninth Circuit Court ruling matters because it reinforces that civilian control and local governance still mean something. It also underscores the fragile balance between public safety and civil liberty, a balance Portland has grappled with for many years. For Oregonians, this isn't theoretical. We've seen what happens when federal forces move in during the 2020 protests, during immigration raids, and during past deployments labeled as quote-unquote peacekeeping. Every time it leaves a scar on trust, on communities, and on the very definition of public order. So, while this ruling may seem like a footnote in a longer political fight, it's a reminder that even now, amid frustration and fatigue, the judicial system still acts as a check. That there are still people inside the system saying, wait, you can't do that. That's why this case matters to Portland. Because if you want to live in a nation of laws and not decrees, we need courts that are willing to draw that line. So now let's move from Portland to Washington, D.C., where another kind of demolition is taking place. One not of protests, but of history. I'm sad to announce that the East Wing of the White House, first constructed in 1902 and then expanded during World War II, has been torn down. The administration said that the plan is to replace it with a 90,000-square-foot ballroom and events facility. estimated to cost around $300 million. Think of how many people that could feed. Officials claim that the project is privately funded and therefore doesn't require formal congressional approval. But preservation experts, including the National Trust for Historic Preservation, say it's not how democracy should work. They argue that the East Wing isn't just an extension of the building. It's part of the People's House, where the public enters, where first ladies worked, where tours began, and where the nation's history literally passed through its halls. So why does this matter beyond the bricks and plaster? Because architecture is always a message. And the message this sends, tearing down the public entrance to build a private ballroom, is that the government belongs to those at the top, not those who walk through its doors. When the People's House becomes a palace, the symbolism isn't subtle. The lack of transparency is equally troubling. Normally, large structural changes at the White House would go through layers of preservation review, historical consultation, and budget disclosures. But this project reportedly bypassed many of those steps. Critics say it's another example of executive overreach. A president making unilateral changes to a public institution under the claim of private funding. Symbolically, it ties right back to where we started today, the No Kings movement. Because if democracy is about shared ownership, then the physical space that represents that democracy should reflect shared stewardship. When you raise part of it without public input, it's not just concrete that disappears, it's a shared sense of belonging. Think about it. The East Wing is where generations of schoolchildren started their White House tours, where volunteers greeted veterans, where holiday trees and Easter egg rolls welcomed ordinary families. All of that gone. To make room for a private events hall. It's hard not to see the metaphor here. At the same time, everyday Americans are facing food insecurity, government shutdowns, and uncertainty about their rights. The seat of power is literally expanding its ballroom. That contrast speaks volumes about priorities and about who the government believes deserves space. For those of us here in Oregon, thousands of miles away, it might feel distant, but it connects directly to our local struggles, whether it's troops in our streets or bulldozers at the White House. These are both examples of unchecked authority. They're both about decisions made without community consent, and they both remind us why civic vigilance matters.
Just a little bit.
Before we close out the show today, I want to bring this conversation home literally. We've talked about national power struggles, shutdowns, and decisions made in D.C. that ripple into every Oregon kitchen. But the truth is, when systems stall, it's our neighbors who step up. Across Clackamas County and the greater Portland community, organizations are filling in the gaps that government leaves behind. With compassion, sweat, and an open door, let's take a moment to shine a light on a few of them. If you live in Clackamas County, you may already know Love One. It's a nonprofit that began with a simple mission: to help neighbors maintain dignity through clean clothes, showers, and connection. They host mobile laundry and hygiene events for families and individuals who have nowhere else to turn, meeting people where they are without judgment. Love One doesn't just wash clothes. They restore dignity, build relationships, and connect guests with social services and housing resources. As Executive Director Brandy Johnson often says, you can't rebuild your life if you can't show up clean to a job interview or a housing appointment. To learn more about Love One or to volunteer, visit loveonecommunity.org. Next on the list is The Father's Heart, a day center and outreach ministry located in Oregon City. For nearly two decades, they've opened their doors to people living on the streets, offering hot meals, showers, clothing, and a warm place to rest. But beyond that, they provide case management, ID recovery, addiction recovery support, and housing navigation. When I spoke with Executive Director Brandy Johnson earlier this year, she said something that really struck me. Every person who walks through our door has a story, and they deserve to be known by name, not circumstance. That's the kind of compassion this community is built on. And yes, Brandy's a very busy woman. You can find out more online at tfshearts.org. That's tfshearts.org. Or just stop by and ask how you can help. Another group that's doing essential work is the Homeless Solutions Coalition of Clackamas County, a coalition between nonprofits, faith communities, housing advocates, and local government. They coordinate everything from emergency shelter capacity to long-term housing solutions, trying to build a unified response to homelessness in our region. They're not just handing out blankets. They're working on systemic change, connecting service providers so families don't fall through the cracks. They believe what I think we all believe, that housing is a human right and that community safety begins with stability. You can learn more or join the coalition at homelesssolutionsclackco.org. That's homelesssolutionsclack, C-L-A-C-K, co.org, or Google Homeless Solutions of Clackamas County to learn more. And finally, there's Bethany's Room. It's part of Blanchet House in Portland. It's a small trauma-informed shelter for women experiencing homelessness, many of whom are fleeing domestic violence situations. What makes Bethany's Room so special is its scale. It's intentionally small so staff can build trust, provide counseling, and create a safe, stable environment for women who are ready to take the next step toward independence. They provide private rooms, meals, and support services that help residents transition into permanent housing. If you want to support them, visit blanchethouse.org/Bethany's Room. Donations, hygiene kits, and volunteer hours are always appreciated. Each of these organizations remind us that public policy becomes personal the moment it hits the streets. When federal aid stalls or political leaders fail to act, these local heroes, the laundry vans, the meal servers, the outreach teams, keep people alive and connected. They're the living proof that democracy isn't only about ballots and speeches. It's about community. And that's what KBOO stands for, too.
Pistol shots ring out in a barroom night. Enter Betty Valentine from the upper hall. She sees a bartender in a pool of blood. Cries out, my God, they've killed them all. Here comes the story of the hurricane. The man the authorities came to blame for something that he never done. Put in a prison cell, but one time he could have been the champion of the world.
Before we go today, let's take a look at what we covered. From the No Kings rallies, where thousands took to the streets to remind those in power that democracy still belongs to the people, to the ongoing SNAP crisis, where millions of families wonder if food assistance will arrive on time. From the federal troop presence in Portland, a reminder that local voices still matter in how our streets are policed, to the demolition of the White House's East Wing, a symbol of how far some will go to rebuild power in their own image. All of it leads to one truth. Real power lives in community. And right here in Oregon, that community shows up through a few organizations like Love One, The Father's Heart, the Homeless Solutions Coalition of Clackamas County, and Bethany's Room. People doing the work every single day to help our neighbors find food, warmth, and hope. If you believe in amplifying those voices, the local, the grassroots, the human, I invite you to support KBOO Community Radio. You can donate online at kboo.fm, through the KBOO app, or by mailing a check to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Listener support keeps independent, community-powered media like this alive, free from corporate control, and rooted right here in Portland. And with that, this has been PDX Progressive Talk Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. I'm Sherry. Wishing you courage, compassion, and connection. Make it a great week, and we'll see you on the radio next time.
I'm a desperate man. and lawyers, guns and money. This shit has hit the fan. Guns and money. Send lawyers, guns and money. Send lawyers, guns and money.